Hebrews chapter 11. We'll begin in Hebrews chapter 11 and then spend some time in the Old Testament book of Daniel as we study together this evening. There are many exciting things that come with the back-to-school time of year. And one of those, if you were able to see, and maybe you had children that were a part of our pew packers that kicked off tonight, we had a lot of fun. We're going to be learning a lot and singing a lot. And so we really hope that, that you can be a part of that, that your children can be a part of that. And we don't discourage any adults who want to participate. I mean, if you really want to come down and participate with us, we have a lot of fun and learn a lot. And also, we announced this morning, and just kind of as a reminder as we think about our children, there are some bulletins that are available at every entrance into the auditorium. Some for our very young children and some for children that are a little older. And all these do are ways that they can do some activities that focus on the passages we're going to be studying that morning. And they can stay engaged in the same verses of Scripture that we're looking at in the sermon. And it can just be a way that we as families can grow together. We want to not only let every member here know, but also those who are guests with us, that we care about them and their families, and we want them to be here with us. We're continuing tonight a series that we've just been referring to as Heroes, as we've looked through some of the individuals in the Hebrews 11 Hall of Faith, as it's often called, and we'll continue that tonight. Next Sunday night, we're going to have the exciting privilege of hearing about a report from the Panama mission trip that that Jonathan coordinated and that several of our members and members from other congregations were a part of. And so that's going to be really exciting. We're going to look forward to that next Sunday, and then we'll pick up with a few more lessons from Hebrews 11 after that. And we definitely want to keep all of our mission work in our prayers and be constantly thinking about ways that we can help with those efforts. I grew up reading about superheroes. I loved comic books. I loved stories of superheroes. And as we began this series last week, we talked about sometimes the temptation that we have if we grew up hearing Bible stories in Bible classes, and often we're taught with coloring pages and flannel graphs, which are good things when we're children, but the temptation is to relegate those stories to just sort of our elementary Bible classes, or maybe even to think of them as stories in the sense of other kinds of stories we might read. And it's tempting to forget there were real people who were dealing with real issues. And so we're going to continue our focus on that. Now, we spent a lot of time last week looking at some of the more well-known individuals mentioned in that Hebrews 11 Hall of Faith. But if you turn with me towards the end of that chapter, to verse 32, we start reading about people that the author just simply does not have time to describe. And beginning in verse 32, we read, "And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight." Now we're going to pause right there, because we're going to be spending time looking at individuals that did some of those things that might not have gotten a specific mention in this chapter, but that were pointed to in these verses. Specifically, we're going to be thinking about what the author says when he describes individuals who shut the mouths of lions or quenched the power of fire. And if we really want to understand individuals in the Old Testament that did that, we'll need to turn to the book of Daniel. So if you would be turning to the book of Daniel, the very first chapter, we're going to look at, again, some familiar accounts from Scripture, but as we consider them from the aspect of not just being another story, but real, three-dimensional individuals that were human just like us, it might be that there are some things that that I've overlooked in my constant reading of this story, and maybe there are some fresh insights that can be gained from the text as we study that together. I mentioned enjoying superheroes as I grew up. One of probably the quintessential superheroes is Superman. You see there the very first issue of Action Comics that he was featured in. And if you want to find what people would describe as maybe the most popular superhero in our country, this would have to be it. Here he is. He shows up on the scene. He is invincible. He doesn't have any weakness other than we find out kryptonite is that one key weakness. But other than that, he can do these amazing things. He can fly. He can see incredibly long distances. There are all of these incredible powers that he had. And we love reading about those kinds of heroes. What's interesting is that Superman was created by two individuals that knew each other from high school, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. They attended high school together, and it was during that high school time that Jerry Siegel's father, Mitchell, who ran a hat shop, was held up. And as a result of that holdup, as a result of a robber pulling a gun in his store, his father died. They later found out that it was likely a heart attack brought on by the shock of someone in there that was holding up his store. But that happened while Siegel was in high school. And so it's always been fascinating to me that just a few years later, this individual who dealt with such a difficult loss that came as a result of a criminal that pulled a gun in a hat shop, all of a sudden comes out with a superhero that's invincible, that bullets just bounce off. Not only that, not only is he invincible, but he's dedicated to stopping crimes, to stopping people from robbing others. It's an interesting coincidence, isn't it? It speaks to our need to try to find heroes that we can hold on to. And growing up, I used to watch some of the old reruns they would have of the Superman TV shows. Those that they would run on Nick at Night, and they would have these the black and white Superman TV shows. And what was interesting about those is whenever he would show up, you always knew what was going to happen. You had the bad guys, and they had guns, and then Superman would show up. And then all of a sudden, it didn't matter how many times they'd tried this before, they would try to shoot their gun. And it never worked. The bullets just bounced off his chest. He just walked over to them. He'd pick them up, hand them off to a police officer or someone else, and then he'd jump back out the window and continue flying on his way. And so you watched it, and it was interesting, but you were never in any real doubt what was going to happen. You knew when he showed up, because he was bulletproof, you knew what the end result was going to be. And so we have this hero that we look to, and he's bulletproof, and nothing can stop him. And we never really doubt the fact that he's going to be victorious. The reason I bring that up is because we're looking at individuals tonight who were heroes, but they were human beings. And see, the temptation I have is that I've read the book of Daniel. We've read the rest of their stories. And so it's tempting to think about Daniel in the lion's den as if he knows what's going to happen. Or Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace as if they already know that they're going to be delivered. And that takes that element of surprise out of it, that element of realism. But what we see when we read the text, it's not like an episode of Superman where we know exactly what's going to happen. These were real people that had never read the end of their own story. So they're going in this situation not knowing what's going to happen. And that's important for us to keep in mind as we look to see how we can model our lives after these heroes of faith. If we were looking to get better in a particular field, if we were trying to get better at our job or at a specific hobby, one of the things we'd probably do is find people who had succeeded and try to model ourselves after them. And so tonight, as we think about individuals that we want to model ourselves after, there are going to be two specific instances in which people risked loss. They risk losing something, losing status, losing power. And we're going to ask the question, what would it be like for me to try to build faith, even at the risk of losing something that's important to me, losing something that's powerful, losing something that I might really value? Am I willing to risk that loss to gain and grow in my knowledge and in my faith? And so we'll begin reading together, looking for some of the characteristics here in the very first verse of Daniel. And we're introduced to what's taking place as the Babylonians have come and they've besieged Jerusalem. Beginning in verse 1. The third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God, and brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths in whom there was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them. And to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. It doesn't take long to see the resolve of Daniel. And in verse 8, we see the first of these two characteristics that's going to help us learn how to develop a faith strong enough even to risk loss. And that is, Daniel made a clear decision. He resolved in his mind that he was not going to defile himself with the king's choice diet. The reason that's important is because the Babylonian strategy here was different than some other countries that would try to conquer a nation and maybe try to obliterate those people, or maybe try to scatter those people out so they could never come back together. The Babylonians were doing something different. They were trying to take the cream of the crop, the best of these people, and to retrain them, give them a new identity, and then set them in their own service. And so we see several key things happening in this first chapter. First, we realize that they took some of the articles out of Israel's temple, out of the temple in Jerusalem, and brought them to the house of their pagan gods. That's kind of a way in war that you're saying, well, the God I serve is more powerful than your God. Now, the text makes it very clear that God is the one who gave Judah into his hand in verse 2. And yet Nebuchadnezzar is trying to make a statement that I'm more powerful than the God that you serve. And so some of those temple articles are taken. Not only that, but they give Daniel and his three friends new names. And so we're familiar with the name Daniel, maybe not so much with Belteshazzar. And we're familiar with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the new names that were given to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And that was not just a random occurrence. Those names weren't just randomly selected from a database of names to choose from, and it didn't really matter which one. There was something significant in these names. Look at what their names meant and what their new names also meant. We go from Daniel, whose name carried with it a meaning, something akin to God is my judge, and he became Belteshazzar, which indicates Bel, protect his life. And that's a reference to a pagan god. Then you have Hananiah, which means something akin to the Lord shows grace. That might be how we describe it. And he became Shadrach, which means the command of Aku, another pagan god. And then Mishael, whose name means who is what God is, became Meshach, which meant who is what Aku is, that same pagan god from earlier. And then lastly, you have Azariah, which means the Lord helps, to Abednego, which is servant of Nego, another one of those pagan gods. So there's more here than just saying, we're going to give you a new name. They're trying to give them a new identity, because their name represented who they were and the God that they served. And so this new name was supposed to sort of instill in them this desire to serve this new God and to embrace this new culture. And so they were trying to take away not only their articles from their temple and the God they worshipped to force them to worship differently, they were trying to really take away their identity, to retrain them in a new language and a new culture. And Daniel makes a decision. It would have been incredibly overwhelming, don't you think, to be in Daniel's position and in the position of his friends? To be at the state they were in life and be taken into this new place that you weren't familiar with all these strange people, and now you're being given orders. It would have been incredibly intimidating, but Daniel resolved to control what he could control. In the world we live in, there's not a lot we can control. As difficult as some of the challenges may be in culture, there are some things we just don't have control over, and it can be intimidating to walk into a situation at school or at work and to think, how could I ever change the status quo? But when we remember Daniel's example, we realize all I can do is resolve for myself how I'm going to act. And so Daniel resolves that he's not going to have the same diet, that those choice delicacies from the king's table. Now, we don't get a lot of details as to why that is. It seems that Daniel understood if he was going to have this diet, it may have been that some of the meat was unclean or maybe involved in pagan worship. It was very clear to Daniel that that meat from that diet was not something that would be good for him. In fact, he said it would defile him, and he was going to hold on to his relationship with God. And we know from the Old Testament laws that God had very specific laws about what could be eaten, what was clean and what was unclean. And so whatever the case might have been, Daniel looked at this and realized, here's something I can control. I'm going to make a decision, even if it means risking something that could be lost, even if it means risking my status here in this new situation. And so what happens next is interesting. They decide to live up to their Hebrew names, not their Babylonian names. And so when the time comes, after they've had a time of rejecting this diet, verse 9 tells us that God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials, but the commander is afraid. In the next verse, he says, what's going to happen when you show up and you look haggard and worn out and you don't look as healthy as all of these others that have had this choice diet? And in verse 12, Daniel says, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink, and then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who are eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. And then we find out that when they did that, Daniel and his friends appeared better than the others who had this choice diet. He was determined not to let this culture define him. And it's important for us to make that same determination, that we're not going to let the culture we live in define us. And it can be discouraging to read articles on the internet, see things on the news, and we think this culture is not reflecting what we think it should based on God's word. But we can decide, I'm not going to be defined by that. I'm going to live up to God's expectations of me, not anybody else. And it might require some action in our lives. It might require us deciding to do things differently than others would want us to do that. But whatever portion we can control, when we can make the decision, if we want to really develop faith, we're going to decide to live up to God's version of our identity. I read recently a story of a museum in London that was set to receive a bust, a head and shoulders of a statue to put on display. And it was shipped in two different packages. It was a stand, the wooden stand, and then the bust itself. Now, the packages were shipped separately, so the stand arrived first. And so you have these workers in an art museum that unpack this stand, and they think that's the work of art they're supposed to be displaying. And they look at the stand, and so they put it on display. People had paid money to get into the museum, looked at this wooden stand that was sitting there on display. A few days later, the actual bust came through. And so you had the package of what should have been on display. And so now they were embarrassed. And they had a group of artists that came out that observed both of the pieces, the statue and then also the stand for the statue. And these artists decided that the stand was actually a better work of art than the statue itself. And so the stand was on display and the statue was thrown away. If we want to let our culture define what is or isn't good or what should or shouldn't be done, we're going to be fighting a losing battle. We've got to live up to God's version of our identity. And we see Daniel and his friends doing just that. I'm not sure exactly why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego became the dominant names that we're familiar with, whereas Daniel's original name becomes the one he's familiar with, but all of them were seeking to live up to their Hebrew name. And so then we go just a few chapters later in the book of Daniel, another familiar story where we have the king who makes a golden image and he is requiring that everyone would bow down to that, and then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego decide they are not going to do that. Kind of reminds us of what we talked about this morning, submitting to God rather than submitting to a law that goes against God's plan. And so they're going to submit to God. And so as we look at this interaction they have with the king in Daniel chapter 3, there are some very important principles that come into play in this conversation. In Daniel chapter 3, beginning in verse 13, then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will be immediately cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? Can we just pause right there and think of that phrase? Think about the inherent pride that's embedded in that phrase. What God is there that can deliver you out of my hands? What is Nebuchadnezzar saying there? I am in charge. I am so powerful. What God do you serve that can take you out of my hands? And so listen to their reply in verse 16. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. Here are individuals that had heard all the stories about God's deliverance in the Old Testament. And so this part of the response sounds natural. They know that God has the power to deliver them. And they can stand before the king and faithfully say, even if they're the only ones who are deciding they're going to stand up, that God can deliver them. But it's what comes next that may surprise us. Verse 18. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Even if he does not. That seems to me to be the key to their faith here. Because it's not just a decision that was made. It's also being followed up with a life of devotion. A life of true dedication to God's Word. You see, it's easy to make a decision. It's easy for me to look back and see all the New Year's resolutions I've made at one point in my life. I can make a decision. I could make a lot of decisions. But actually living up to that decision is the hard part. Actually living up to the decision that I've made, devoting myself to the decision I've made, is the key. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stand there and they say, we don't need to answer you in this matter. We have enough faith and enough confidence. We don't even need to give you an answer. But just to let you know, we know that God can deliver us. But even if he doesn't, we're still not going to submit to this. That's the challenge of faith, isn't it? To have the kind of faith where we can say, even if he doesn't. I know that there might be a situation that I'm facing, and I'm going to pray about it, and I'm going to trust in God. But even if this situation doesn't change, I am still going to be faithful. And even if things don't work out the way I want them to, I'm still going to be faithful. And even if I really wish that things were different, I'm still going to be faithful. And they had that same faith. It wasn't going to faze them if they went into this fiery furnace and then woke up in eternity, because they had decided no matter what, they were going to submit to God. And so it's not just making a decision that we're going to be different, but it's being devoted enough. Devoted enough that you would give up position of power. Remember, Daniel and his friends had advanced to high places in the government. These were not just three innocent bystanders here. These were people for whom they had a great deal of responsibility, and they were going to risk that. They were going to risk that position in order to show their devotion. And so I have to ask myself, what am I willing to risk in order to show my devotion to God? Is there status among my friends that I need to be able to risk? Maybe I need to risk my friends not thinking I'm really cool because they don't think Christianity is cool. And because I'm a Christian, they won't think I'm as cool. Or maybe it could be some embarrassment I'm going to risk at work when I tell people about my faith and maybe try to share it with them. There may be a job opportunity that because of ethical concerns I need to pass on. There might be opportunities to advance that because I'm seeking to serve God, I decide I need to do something different. Am I willing to risk something, maybe even something that I've really wanted because of my devotion to God? It's a challenging question. It's something that they were willing to risk. And so you have the furnace that is not only heated up, but it's heated up seven times more than it was usually heated. And as if that weren't enough detail for us to understand the serious nature of this, we also get another detail. And that is that certain valiant warriors who were in his army would tie them up to cast them into the furnace. And those men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and other clothes, cast in the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the furnace slew those men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Not only was it seven times hotter than it would have been, but it took the lives of the men who were commanded to throw them into the furnace. It's easy to have the decision that I'm going to trust God, but when the furnace heats up, and when things get difficult, that's when the challenge comes, isn't it? When things happen that attack my faith, and when Satan uses doubts and fears to try to tempt me to turn my back on God, that's when it really gets difficult, and that's when I have to decide, am I going to display the same kind of devotion? And so later on, when Daniel is thrown into the den of lions, he has to decide whether he's going to hold on to his devotion. His devotion was already seen in the fact that he refused to quit praying to God, even after those that were out to get him had manipulated the king into making a decree that no one could do that. Daniel was still going to live up to his relationship with God. And so in his case, he was thrown into the lion's den. And I don't know if growing up I have this picture in my mind, if this is just something I've created or not, but it seems like when I think of the coloring sheets and the storybooks that I've read, it seems like the lions always seemed pretty friendly. They seemed kind of cartoon-like. And maybe that's because as a child you don't need pictures of vicious animals that you need to color in, but this was a serious situation. And so when the furnace is heated up and when the lions are growling, am I going to have the kind of faith to show a devotion that's really going to risk something, really going to risk me losing my life, my reputation among certain people, maybe a chance I might have to advance or to sort of make myself better? And notice what happens as a result of that devotion. If you would, the last place we'll turn is Daniel chapter 6. After he has been thrown into the lion's den and after he has survived because of God's power, and the king gives orders, and then those who had maliciously accused Daniel receive that same punishment. Look at the decree that the king gives. King Darius here gives. Now remember what Babylon had done. Remember they had taken the temple articles. We even find out later on in the book of Daniel, just a few chapters after that, after they take them in chapter 5, that there's even a feast that's being thrown using some of those vessels from the temple. And so this is a nation that has tried to brand into these captives a new culture and tried to show that their God was more powerful. And look at what happens as a result of Daniel's devotion in Daniel chapter 6. Darius makes this decree in verse 26. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. He is the living God and enduring forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. It's amazing what can happen when we show devotion. It's amazing what can happen when we're determined, no matter how hot the furnace seems to be, how angry the lions seem to be, if we're determined to stay true to God, it's amazing what will happen. And in none of these situations do we see these men trying to exalt themselves. Do we see them trying to hold themselves up? That's not what happens when we seek to serve God and we make a decision that we follow up with devotion. When we do that, we glorify God. And so if I want to ask myself if I'm displaying the right kind of faith, maybe a good way to gauge that is, do people glorify God? Am I looking for my own glorification, to feed my own ego? Am I looking for people to see what incredible things I've done? I mean, if you were Daniel or Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, wouldn't it be tempting to try to tell this story to all of your friends? This is a pretty big deal. Can you believe what I did? And yet they were concerned about glorifying God. And so they're two simple words. Maybe these are two words that we wouldn't even need to spend time in the book of Hebrews or the book of Daniel to adding to our spiritual vocabulary. We know they're necessary, but the question is, if I want to have a faith that's willing to risk loss, can I put those into my life, no matter what happens? I mentioned this morning the passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and I thought it also was very fitting considering the attitude that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had. That there may be times when we'll have a way of escape, but are we willing to simply endure what might be in store for us? If we were depending on our own power and our own strength, and we were trying to survive the furnace and the lion's den just merely on our own human ability, there'd be no chance. And as difficult and as trying as it is, we can endure what's in store for us if we're faithful to God. And so we're reminded of heroes. Heroes in Hebrews chapter 11. They're not bulletproof. They haven't read the end of their own story. And so they don't know what's going to happen. And in the same way, we don't know the end of our own story. We don't know what's going to happen in our lives. We have no guarantee of anything in the future other than a God who will faithfully watch over us if we'll faithfully continue to serve Him. And so tonight, you may need to make that decision to devote your life to God. You may need to come forward to put Him on in baptism and live that kind of life with the confidence that we can have that God is true to His promises. Or it may be that you feel right now that you're in the midst of the furnace or the midst of the lion's den and you need help and encouragement. If we can help in any way, please come as we stand and sing together.